Hey everybody, it's Adam Shartoff, your host of Filmwax Radio. It's Friday, October the 7th, 2022. This is episode number 736. Welcome. I hope you're well. The beauty part of this episode is I have two great filmmakers, Andy Timoner, who is making her second appearance on the show. She's made a lot of very well-received documentaries, and her latest might end up being her most successful of all. It's her most personal of all, that much I can definitely say. And I had her on the show back in, April of 2015, so 7 years ago, on episode number 286 with her film about Russell Brand called Brand, A Second Coming. And she is back, and we'll talk about her film in a moment. It's called, again, Last Flight Home. And my other guest is also making her second appearance on Film Wax after many years. Anna Lily Amirpour was on episode 257 back in November of 2014, which is, wow, oh my goodness, going quickly on 8 years ago. When you when I go over these details, and I don't do it all the time, but I occasionally do it, like when there's a symmetry involved, like today, there's these two female filmmakers, both really, really great storytellers, who both making their second appearance on Filmwax, and, you know, not recent appearances. So I kind of want to look back and see when those appearances took place. And I'm just, it just makes me realize how long I've been doing this podcast. It's, and the body of work and the guests, it's just, it once in a while it hits me. Anyway, Anna Lily was on with her first feature film back in November of 2014 called A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night, which was a big smash. She was joined by the actor Sheila Vand, who was her lead actor in that film, and she is back with a new film called Mona Lisa and the Blood Moon, which we'll talk about in a little while in the second segment. But first we'll talk about Last Flight Home with Andy. It is produced by MTV Documentary Films, and it's about a close-knit family who honors their patriarch, whose last wishes is to take his life. It is definitely her most personal work yet. I just did a Q&A with Andy at the Woodstock Film Festival, and then we talked on the phone. We had some technical difficulties. I will not make it, so it took me a bit of editing to put this together, but I had a wonderful time. I find Andy to be a great guest and a great filmmaker. The film is already winning lots of festival awards, as it did at Woodstock, where it won, I think, the Audience Award for Best Documentary. Andy Timoner's stunning verite account of a family courageously and joyously facing both life and death is the thrust of Last Flight Home. The film received its world premiere at the Sundance Film Festival and was most recently featured at the Telluride Film Festival. It will open in New York City at the IFC Center this Friday on October 7th, and in Los Angeles at the Lemley, Monica, and Glendale Film Centers on October 14th, with other cities to follow. On an unremarkable suburban street, we find 92-year-old Eli Timoner, who founded Air Florida, the fastest-growing airline in the world, in the 1970s. During his final days, we discover an extraordinary life, one filled with wild achievements, tragic loss, and above all, enduring love. I don't want to talk too much more about it because we'll give you the little bit of the trailer here, and then we'll go into my conversation with Andy. But her whole family gathers in Eli's final days as he decides he's going to take his life legally, even though it's a very complicated process. The film is already having, and the people behind the film, including her sister and her brother, are having impact on the laws around one's decision, especially under extraordinary circumstances, to take their own life. And that is what the film is already achieving some sort of impact. Andy is an internationally acclaimed filmmaker whose work focuses on impossible visionaries. And Last Light Home is no different. She has the rare distinction of winning the Grand Jury Prize at Sundance twice, both for Dig and We Live in Public. Both films were acquired by the Museum of Modern Art for its permanent collection. That is indeed a very, very prestigious achievement. This is, again, Andy's second appearance. I recommend you try to see this film. It's certainly touching as everybody lives longer. And during the last few years of what families have gone through, I think this film will have an emotional impact on anyone who sees it. Again, it's currently at the IFC Center as of Friday, and it will be in L.A. on Friday the 14th, and then we'll expand wide. And then in November, it will be on Paramount Plus, the streaming platform. So there's lots of ways to see it. Here, my friends, is Andy Timoner back on Film Wax Radio.
Daddy, you're going to see the doctor, and then the clock starts.
The clock starts.
Daddy was so full of life.
His legacy is massive.
Why not just try?
Elon started an airline. He believed everyone should be able to afford to fly.
Are you concerned that the big boys are going to drive you out of business?
No.
Eli was a philanthropist. He would raise millions. He was a pillar of society.
Meeting with prime ministers, princes, presidents.
He knows Joe Biden from the 70s. And even though he ran an airline, he would get the kids to school. We were a happy fivesome. Those were idyllic years.
And then one day, he had a massive stroke from an accident, and life changed forever.
Well, I'm going to take my life on the 3rd of March. I don't want to fight anymore. I just want peace.
We don't call it assisted suicide. We call it supporting the right to terminate your life.
We don't get a choice on how we come into this world, but we should have a choice on how we go out.
Do you want...
Wow, you look smashing.
Thank you. I just came from ABC News. They have very good makeup people.
I know. I have them on hand all the time. you think what this is like doesn't take hours of work or something?
You actually look really good. I have
Thank
to
you.
Say.
Thank
yeah, you.
You
look a little better than you did at Woodstock. I don't know if it's the lighting.
Maybe.
Or what. Both of us know. Look like we got back to the city. That's screwed up.
I was pretty run down. I mean, I think by the time, yeah, I was a little bit run down, I admit. But
no
it was
words.
Still, yeah, but I had a good time. I enjoyed our Q&A and, you know, I was very, very glad to be, appointed that film. So I hope it.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. And thank you for taking the time to do this. I'm sorry. It's been like a little topsy-turvy in terms of timing, but
that's okay.
We got held at the studio. So
yeah, no problem at all. Yeah.
Cool.
Well, it's fun. It's kind of exciting. I feel like, you know, there's a volatility to it. It's fine.
I mean, you know what? Since I saw you, we won Woodstock and then we were New York Times critics pick and things are going pretty well. And we've had a couple screenings in town that have been very, very well received. Like the audience just like it was at Woodstock, you know, but
yeah.
Packed.
Right.
Absolutely. Both screenings were jam packed.
These are special one-offs, right?
And they were special one-offs. There was one at DCTV on Monday night, and it turned
out. Oh yeah, their new cinema. They have a new
so
cinema.
Sarah,
they
just, Mom.
Right.
Hi
there.
Hi, I'm along for the ride.
Mom's here, and Morgan's Mazel. In the back.
Hi there. Nice to see you again.
Nice to see you.
And we were so. It was the firehouse that it was.
Yeah.
Her father was FDNY. And that it was the firehouse of her father.
Wait, movie, say that part again?
The movie, the DC TV is the firehouse of
I know,
of
it's the firehouse
of
cinema.
My grandfather.
Oh, that is very bizarre. Wow.
Yeah, it was bizarre. It was amazing.
I'm
so
trying
that's super
to,
cool.
I'm really looking forward. I just brought on Dara from DC TV, actually, because I used to do lots of stuff with DCTV, you know, when I was doing more than a podcast for a long time. And I have a lot of good, I have a couple of friendships there at DCTV. So finally, I'm dying to get down. I was at the groundbreaking with Michael Moore and Morgan Spurlock and all,
wow.
and everybody, but I, you know, it took 5 more years to actually open the doors to this place.
You're just reminding me that I was meant to invite Morgan Spurlock this week and I didn't. Damn.
I'm sorry.
It's too late now. The movie's playing in like an hour or something.
Well, you never know. You never
there
know.
There is tomorrow.
That's right. And tomorrow, Sandy is going to be doing her Q&A. But
yes.
Right? Sandy Dabowski. Yeah. But tonight, it's tonight Amy Bird.
Yes.
Great. Oh, great.
She's amazing.
I love her.
Yeah. They're both amazing. And,
yeah,
and
no.
Chai Vassarelli gave the most unbelievable
heartfelt
and
introduction.
Yeah, introduction. Are we recording right now for the podcast?
Yeah.
Should not chime in.
Oh, it's fine. It's what my that is like what my podcast is, very casual, just a little deceptively, because you get all of the good stuff in there, but it's kind of masked by a very casual, off the cuff kind of thing. But believe me, everybody's going to know where. And like, for instance, it's at the IFC Center this week as we speak. And then on the 14th, it opens in L.A. And then a national expansion takes place. And then it's going to be on Paramount Plus in November. But right now, go see it in the movie theaters with your friends and your family. Take everybody, because you'll want to talk about the film together.
Yeah, it's a group experience, but it's definitely a better group experience than anything. It's been an incredible experience also being here with the whole family. And we'll all be Q&A-ing tonight at IFC and then tomorrow night as well at the 7:15 showings. And then we're off to London to the London Film Festival Monday and Tuesday, Morgan and I, but then we'll be back in LA to open the film next weekend as a family again. So, and then to San Francisco and on from there. So it's a really beautiful experience to share a dad with everyone, you know, and really, I hope that his legacy seems to be one of great healing and joy for people who see the film. I mean, several people last night said they found it to be absolutely joyous. Wow. So.
Well, while you're there with your mom, I have a question, because this will piggyback onto the question I asked at our Q&A at Woodstock Film Festival, which was, you know, about that moment with your sister, allowing your dad to feel his guilt and remorse and his shame and then be able to release it. Do you feel like your dad had that peace? Do you think he got there before he passed away? Before the
passed away is fine.
Before, I mean, that's he was, what he did. I guess so. Yeah, that's true. It's euthanized, he died. Whatever. Yeah.
He took his own life, but legally. So,
right.
But yeah. The technical term is medical aid in dying, but I absolutely do feel that dad died knowing that he had been a great man. And that was not something that I think he went into this period of time feeling. And he, you know, at one point in his life, he felt that way. He had founded the fastest growing airline in the world. He was providing for his family and then some, and for 3,000 employees, and a patron of the arts, and so charitable. And he was just really doing great things in the world. But when he had that accidental stroke 40 years ago, he was pushed out of the airline he created, you know, because there were no disability protections, and they didn't think Wall Street, the board didn't think Wall Street would take kindly to a quote cripple running an airline. So he lost his baby, and, you know, he had to resign, and the airline was mismanaged for another couple of years. Uh-huh. It was a very, very tough life for them. And especially during COVID, which was not kind in any way to the elderly. It was right, hard. And he,
it's okay. She can be on too.
No, she's like, busy talking to the driver.
Oh, okay.
Do you want to be on, Mom? No, she doesn't want to be on.
No. He sounds like a very nice Jewish boy, but no.
It's been very gratifying for Mom, I think, too. Like, this whole having the film, you know, something that she watched every day. You could talk about that.
Hi, Adam. Yeah, it gives me a lot of comfort to watch, to let him go.
Mm-hmm.
Every time I watch it, I feel good. I know he's at peace.
Oh, that's good. Yeah. I had a sense too.
It was, I think by then he had witnessed so much love and the impact on his former employees and everything, that he was in a position to actually say, you know what, I'm ready to do this. And
was always an incredibly honest human being. As you know, when Rachel says, I wrote a eulogy on the plane, what was his first question was, is it truthful? You know? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, Rachel has said now in Q&As that many people don't ever get to that point of being able to actually be honest about the things that they're truly ashamed of, mm-hmm. and even before they die. And so we just feel so blessed that we had that chance to surround him with love and take him through all of that so he could go on unburdened.
Yeah. That comes as a relief because us as excuse me, as a viewer of the film,
learning of the film is derived from it, I think, for all of us who are alive, you know, and living for decades to come, to measure our lives differently mm-hmm. than we have, because mm-hmm. he admits on the last night of his life that he measured his life wrong, you know, and that mm-hmm. by, you know, right. and as my sister says in the final sermon, by that measure, by measuring, if he measured his life by love, by that measure he wildly succeeded. So
do you think you're going to be able to
look at our lives?
Absolutely true. Do you think
laptop hotel room take two
where we are ready? The question I think I was trying to say was, you know, do you think your changed as a filmmaker after making such a deeply personal film, is there any going back to the types of films you were making before?
You know, I think that's a brilliant question that I also can't really answer, because I didn't even know I was making a film when I was making this film. I was just following my gut instinct to record my father. And he's the one who said, I instinctively know you're on the right track. Wow. But I thought I was just capturing him for our family archives. I didn't, and for me not to forget his voice and his personality, I did not think I'd make a film until one really emerged, and the profundity of the weeks leading up to his death, like the learning that happened that naturally came from our family, just doing things like the Vidui that Rachel did, you know, the deathbed confessional we talked about, and the Zoom calls and the celebration of life before he died. Like, it just started to feel like if I didn't share it, that would be wrong. You know, it would be like against the credo of being a documentary filmmaker, which is all about learning and sharing what you learn. However, it was so private and so raw and vulnerable that that really had to be a family decision. And it was thanks to the healing effect of the film that Rachel witnessed that she agreed to it finally, because she was not at first down with the idea of us being presented to the public in that way, especially because at that point, actually, you know, when it premiered at Sundance, it was not it violated Jewish law to wow. help a person end their life. Any premature, you know, decision to end your life was actually against, they've now reversed that position.
Which is amazing. So that's
amazing. Yeah. So yeah. we're already seeing changes, maybe partially from this. And, you know, and if we can change the law here in New York, where I sit right now talking with you, that would be, you know, the greatest legacy for, because here's the thing. My father suffered quietly. He never complained. He was the most extraordinary person. He taught us what grace looks like and generosity. And the hardest part for me as his daughter was not being able to take away his suffering. And the fact that this film could actually help so many countless others who are suffering now would be really the greatest legacy for him. Because I always think of this film as a gift that kind of came through me, that's really from him to us, you know. And and that's, I think that's what it is. I just kind of delivered it. And and this is true for a lot of my films. Like, I just have no, like, I had no idea when I was making We Live in Public that I would turn it into a film about the internet's effect on privacy and intimacy, because who would know, you know, who really knew what was going to happen until Facebook happened? So, I mean, I shot the movie in 1999 and put it out in 2009 because it took that long for society to catch up. So I never really know what I'm going to do, but I will say I've written a screenplay that covers my father's story because I never had the archival footage to make a documentary. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to bring the airline alive and the tragic plane crash that happened, and
the stroke and its impact on our family and really be able to kind of bring all of that and my father to life. So I've been working on a script for like 6 years and I would dream to make that film for sure. I don't know. Yeah. The question is, will I stop making personal films anytime soon? And I don't know if I can ever stop making personal films. I mean, it's so gratifying. It's terrifying, but it's also so gratifying to, you know, to share what one most appreciates in life. And in my case, my father was my favorite person in the world. So
it also helps
your heart, you know?
Yeah. And it helps that this is a deeply personal film, which just happened to come together so cinematically and so structurally on the structural dimension to it that, you know, it just made sense. I mean, it was delivered almost to you in a way, as I think.
Yeah, there was a countdown inherent in it. And in that countdown, we all went through. Yeah. And in those 15 days, we all, you know, went through quite a lot. Of course, I could play with that and do Zoom montages and, you know, all of that, but it was all building towards an inevitable ending. And you kind of, I think each character, each person in my family really has a full arc in the film, as does everyone who visits Dad, right? Because to me as an editor, what was also really fascinating was the impact that facing death had on the people who were talking to Dad. You know, some people didn't even have the courage, which is fine, but they couldn't face talking to Dad again. I thought it would break them down. But my friend Lucy, who showed up in the film and asked him, you know, lots of questions, including how are we going to talk to each other afterwards?
The British. English, right? Yeah.
Just English.
Yeah.
She came the night before and couldn't speak. Like was just crying because of her own issues with death and the thought of losing her own father. And she ended up coming back the next day with us with written questions, you know, because I said to her, Lucy, this is an opportunity. He's not scared. He's not shy about talking about it. You can ask him anything and confront your own feelings about life and death, you know, and because we're all going to die and we're all going to lose the people that we love one way or another. So, I think, you know, thank God my family was supportive of it.
I just want to mention again that it's as I record this, as we record this, you are moments away from going to the ISC Center to have your first screening there. Well, it may have been playing a couple of times, but you're doing a Q&A with Amy Berg, filmmaker Amy Berg. And parts of some of the other family members will be in the Q&A as well, I assume.
Yes. My mom will be there.
Your mom is there, which is.
Yeah. One of the grandkids will be there.
Shabbat. So I guess Rachel will not be there. That's my guess.
Rachel's just not feeling that great after the Yom Kippur push this week. She's just exhausted. So she had to bow out tonight, but she'll probably be there tomorrow.
Perfect. Sandy Dabowski, love him. He'll be there to do the
opening weekend.
Hey, thanks
I'm gonna
for
stand up from know. This interview and walk down there right now. Thank you for having me on, Adam.
Oh, Andy, it's really a pleasure to connect with you and to have the opportunity to see the film, to do the Q&A and everything. It's great. It's why I do this thing, you know, so we have conversations about such topics. And one day I'll tell you what's going on with my own mother and what happened with my dad. So this, you know, the themes are so universal, but on a personal level, there's another whole story that I could share one time, you know?
Oh, I would love to hear it. I mean, that's also the greatest part about this is not just sharing my father with you, but also everyone sees their own family in this film.
It's
really remarkable because it's so precisely about my family, but yet in those details, and that's what's so interesting about documentary and so magical about film. It's in those details that you find your own father and mother and your own loved ones and your own self. It's just, I think it's, I don't know. It's always been really interesting to me, that idea. You'd think if you cast a wide net, it would be more relatable, but it's actually the more particular, the more relatable. So
absolutely. And that means getting more into the more difficult, complicated storytelling.
You know,
yeah, so and
so it can get very wrong.
Afterwards, you know, we talk afterwards. We'll all go out for a drink afterwards because there's no like walking away. You just have to stand there and hug people and talk. So
yeah,
we learned that at Telluride. You know, like we left the cinema and like 50 people just stood on the street for like an hour and a half. You know, it's just like, okay, we have to kind of find a place to go afterwards. So
I understand,
but it's a really beautiful cathartic experience, and I'm really grateful to have this opportunity. Really grateful to MTV Documentary Films for how hard they're all working too, and for the belief, their belief in it. Sheila Nevins especially, and Liza Burnett Pfefferman. So truly feeling blessed.
MTV Docs?
MTV Documentary Films.
Okay. I didn't really even know that. Okay, true.
And it'll be on Paramount Plus by Thanksgiving, but it's gonna roll out to like, it'll be here in New York now, today, and next week in LA and
right,
in London
on the 14th. Film
Festival in Queen, and that's Monday and Tuesday at London Film Festival, and then it'll open in London like further into November. But then it's San Francisco and Seattle and Portland and Austin, Texas, and there's screenings in Chicago. It's opening in Boston and also Washington. Oh, you know, you can find it on Interlope. You can find it on Interloper Films,
which is your production company.
And also on my Instagram, in my bio is a link tree where you can link to tickets for all of the screenings.
And I'll put that in afterwards on the, like, I'll put the website on the end and the share it and everything. So
great. I think the link tree is probably the smartest thing, but I think it's a brilliant idea. You just go screenings and then you go from screenings to, and you could click on it. You could see all the cities and stuff. It's really cool.
Okay.
Anyway. All right. Thank you, well, Adam. Have a great evening.
You too. I hope it goes. Right. I'm sure it will go great. So thank you.
I'll talk to you soon. Okay.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Are you definitely, definitely sure you're ready to go?
I'm ready to go. The next adventure. I'm so grateful that my wife is stuck with me.
I'm an old shoe, don't you understand?
You're my slipper.
You never helped me like that.
Are you scared?
No.
What's made the difference now?
Providence.
There's a story in the Talmud. May your saplings be just like you.
You did pretty well with the saplings, don't you think?
I'm scared of what it's going to be like to not have a father. I've always had him there.
I'm his daughter. When he needs me to be his rabbi, I'll be his rabbi.
My whole path has been because of him.
What you've provided for us our whole lives is love and care.
The world looks so peaceful from above. You've been grounded for so long.
I'll always watch you.
Anna Lily Amirpour. Her new film, I think it's her third feature, is called Mona Lisa and the Blood Moon. It is in theaters, on digital, and on demand as of September 30th. Kate Hudson and Jun Jong Seo star in the mind-bending thriller from this visionary director. When a struggling single mother, played by Kate Hudson, befriends a mysterious mental institute escapee with supernatural powers, she sees a lucrative opportunity to make some fast cash, but when they draw the attention of a detective played by Craig Robinson, their luck starts to run out as the cops close in on their crime spree. It's an exciting, fun movie. Just thrilled to be able to talk to Anna Lily, and we start the conversation talking about what's going on in Iran right now, and this is Anna Lily's heritage, and it's preoccupying her, I should say. So we talk about that first, and then we get into the film, and I just had a great time talking to her. Both of my conversations with both Andy Timoner as well as with Anna Lily Amirpour are both available as well on our YouTube channel, just as an FYI, or you can watch them on the website at filmwaxradio.com. Here now, though, is my conversation with Anna Lily Amirpour, who also returns to Film Wax Radio.
Attention all New Orleans units, stand by for broadcast. We are looking for a violent 103M, escaped from the home of mentally insane adolescents. She is described as an Asian female, brown hair, brown eyes, and she is considered dangerous. Use extreme caution. Over.
Copy. Lucky me.
Yo, where your friends at?
Is this little old you? All alone in this big bad world?
Dude.
You okay?
You don't sound like you're from around here. I mean, you live in New Orleans? I'm not going back there.
What's that? Stop it.
What, did you, like, run away from somewhere?
I don't want to go back!
Hi there, Anna Lily. How are you?
I'm doing good. I'm doing okay. I'm a little bit like ODing on the internet and on social media and that kind of thing. But
right.
But yeah. I'm okay.
Do you feel like you have to do a lot of that you're on firsthand, the kind of stuff you're talking about? I assume you're talking about stuff to promote the upcoming premiere.
It's been all about what's happening in Iran and this movement of women uprising. And I feel like there's not really clear paths to information, to understanding it in the right way. And I mean, even getting any information I can see is scarce. I have to hunt for it. So like, it's like an amazing moment, and it's an entire country of women in a really conservative Middle Eastern country standing up and saying, fuck you, I'm done with this. Like,
right. So
I just really wanted to help create a career path for some people here. Mm-hmm. And I mean, whoever, to like have some information. So honestly, like, I was like, this is literally the week the film's coming out and I'm barely.
Yeah. I mean, and then so you have this enormous thing that you have an enormous emotional and personal stake in going on at the same time.
Yeah. But that's the way it goes. And anyway, my film is about freedom at the heart of it. So
that's true.
You know, like a mad, wild thirst for freedom. So
yeah, right. Yeah. And so you though were, have you ever lived, I mean, obviously you've probably spent a great amount of time in Iran though, can I guess, or because I know you were brought up, you were born and I guess partly spent some of your life in the UK and then you came to California when you're pretty young, right? Isn't that the story?
Well, yeah, I was born in the UK. My parents left after the revolution, obviously.
Mm-hmm. Right.
They had me in England and then we came here and we first went to Miami when I was a kid.
Oh.
And so I was in Miami for the first 4 years or so, not that long. And then California is really where I had my teenage, like high school.
Right.
You know puberty kind of stuff. So.
Right. Yeah. Those are the big years.
I have been to Iran. I was there once in 2002 and for a summer. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, I had an encounter with the morality police. The exact same, because the guy, someone on the street stopped her because a little bit too much hair was showing.
Mm.
And I had the same thing. I had a guy stick a gun in my back and tell me to cover myself. And I actually had to look because I was covered from head to toe and all these, they make you wear like loose coats and.
Right.
It's absurd. It's the Handmaid's Tale for real.
Sure. Yeah.
So yeah, I was there then, but I haven't spent like extended periods of time there.
Do you have like through, so you met the most, have you created relationships though that are there with people that are there or are filmmakers or artists? Because I mean, certainly a lot of them.
I am friends with, right now, in this particular moment, I don't think it's probably a helpful thing to say anybody's name who I'm friends with who's there right now, because the government is really attacking students, artists, journalists. They've taken the universities hostage yesterday, multiple universities, but like the MIT of Iran, the Harvard of Iran is in Tehran, and they... Mm-hmm. The military attacked the university yesterday and closed it and surrounded it and is killing students inside the university because those are the kids that are the smartest kids that could be the future leaders. And
sure. Right. And are the shit stirrers probably, you know, according. Yeah. Oh,
but
my
everybody's
God.
United. Honestly, this moment is different than all the This is 43 years of, it's not like protests or anything new for Iran, because it's a tyrannical regime and they've had some form of this like conflict for a long time. But this particular one started from women reacting to this girl getting murdered 2 weeks ago. So it's been 17 days straight of protests, and it was the women that went to the streets. And when when women are going and standing up in front of guns, that should tell you everything about like what's going on in that country.
Yeah. And how long it's been going on, like in the minds and the hearts of those women, even though they just maybe in the last 2 weeks finally said enough is enough, but it probably enough was enough for.
So happy. Know, yeah, decades. It has been enough for 43 years boiling up. And I'm so happy they did this. And the men, like everybody rose, it's shoulder to shoulder. Like the people, it's so unified. Small villages, it's not just Tehran, it's like the whole country.
Right. That's awesome. That's amazing. It's so inspiring when these things happen. And is there a way that if anybody's interested in finding out more or helping or just sharing information?
I think helping. I've been on social media and I've been posting myself and I've been sharing things from Golshifteh Farhani is an actress who's been really in a way staying on the pulse of moment to moment stuff. I think that like because the government shut down the internet on day two and they do that because they want to keep it quiet. So it's like these videos are getting leaked, you know, to people out here, and they want us to be their voice, to express it like on social media, express it however you can, tag the United Nations, tag the UN, tag UNICEF, tag the Human Rights Watch, tag CNN, tag MSNBC, tag Fox News, tag the LA Times and New York Times, tag everybody because CBS finally, I saw an article today by CBS that was accurate and good, and I was so relieved. The New York Times wrote something yesterday that was really disappointing and misinformation and didn't get it right, and it was a real... I think people have to independently get their information and then just share it, express solidarity and outrage towards this is an extremely corrupt, vile Islamic regime and call it what it is. Mm-hmm. Don't be afraid to say what it is. Those mullahs, the supreme leader, those people, they're evil. Mm-hmm. That's it. It's simple. It's not even like a debate.
Ambivalence. There's no ambiguous.
No, it's not. We're in a Hitler kind of level of extremism. Okay. Now that
let's breathe it out and let's do an awkward pivot here, but no, it's, if I had known that I wouldn't have bothered you tonight, my God, you have more things.
No, I'm happy to talk about my film and I think it's important to talk. So
is your publicist, I'm sure. Yeah.
Life goes on for everybody, and we all have to do. And my films really are about a deep, unquenchable thirst for freedom and for you know, like taking a close look at the systems that are in place that like obstruct you from getting to a feeling of freedom.
Well, let me get out of the way. We'll come right back to that point, of course. But I just want to make sure people know Mona Lisa and the Blood Moon, which is your third feature, will be in theaters on digital and on demand. It already is. Let me rephrase it. It is in theaters on digital and on demand as of
this Friday, past
Friday. 30. Yeah. And so why is it that what is your impulse that you like to set the stories through? Where the characters are typically have these special powers or these special superhuman sort of aspects to them. Is that like just a way to create an entertaining thing on the surface?
It's very entertaining.
I love this film was so fun to watch.
I don't think there's anything more exciting than imagining what your superpower would be if you could have any If you could have any power, what would you have? You know, designing a supernatural character gives you that joy. And, you know, for me, I was just thinking, if I could just control all the pricks out there with just my mind, you know, like that would be pretty helpful, because basically it just means that for Mona Lisa, she has the ability to just control anybody if she needs to. That means she doesn't have to fear anybody, really, at least physically. So that means that she can really wander freely. She doesn't have to avoid the dark, scary alleys. She doesn't have to avoid the shady group of thugs. She can go and walk right into them.
She can
go wherever the wind takes her.
But it's interesting. She too, as the movie starts, is also sort of ensnared by this costume that she was forced to wear and imprisoned, and out of the fear that people have of her strength. So a female who has of her strength. Yeah. So, you know, it kind of goes back to what we were talking about before a little bit. And you drew that parallel as well. So this character played by June, John, how do you pronounce her name? June Jung-seo?
It's Jung-seo.
Jung-seo?
Jun Jung-seo. Her name is Jung-seo, but they, in Korean, the last name comes first. So
right.
Jung-seo, okay. Jun, but they put Jun first.
Got it.
I always called her Jung-seo, or I always called her Rachel. She was like, call me Rachel when she was here.
Why was Rachel's her chosen?
It's her like little American, make it easy for you.
Right. The chosen name. Yep.
But she's Jung-seo. Yeah, she's amazing.
How much of the story then, or her character specifically, was this in response to anything, or did it just come out of your imagination arbitrarily? I mean, you know, often people will write something, and then, of course, as they watch it unfold, then they figure out, oh, this is where my mind was at the time. I guess I didn't realize it.
With her, I mean, she was always from Korea. Her origin story is that she's from North Korea. So, right.
Okay.
And it's a really cool backstory that she has of how she became what she is, and came to America at a really young age. And because of her strange abilities, had some violent incidents with foster care that led them to the conclusion that she was psychotic and should be put away.
Right.
And medicated. So she's been discarded by the system, and she's been in a catatonic state for 10 years. And that's where we meet her at the beginning of the film. Mm-hmm. So she's ready to wake up, and she's hungry for... Really what I wanted was to create this kind of fantasy adventure set in New Orleans, where I wanted a character that felt almost like a newborn child, so that like through her, I could reconnect to the chaos of modern day reality with the childlike kind of enthusiasm for exploration.
Mm. And not so coincidentally, maybe that's part of the reason why she bonds so strongly with the young boy, the son of Kate Hudson's character.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah.
She shares that something there.
The pure, the kind of innocent, no ulterior motive connection. Yeah.
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 And talk about Kate Hudson a little bit, that relationship.
Kate. Yes, Kate. Kate's sensational. I've been a Kate Hudson fan since forever. I've loved her since 200 Cigarettes. I'm one of those people that loves...
Mm-hmm.
When I love an actor, I'll watch all their movies, and I've literally seen every Kate Hudson movie because of her. Whatever the movie is, I just love her.
You know? I understand. So, right. So that's loyalty too, by the way.
Well, it's a fangirl thing. If you're a fan of somebody, I don't know if you have any actors like that where you're just like, I just want to see it to see them. You know, it's like. It's a certain thing.
Oh, of course.
Who?
Yeah, of course. Oh, well, when I was very young, I mean, it was like an Al Pacino, somebody like that, you know.
Oh, sweet, yeah.
But that's, I'm talking about 30 years ago where,
yeah,
you know, it was like, you know, every time you saw that person, it was like a bit of magic or something. Yeah, of course, you know.
Yeah.
And I don't know if there's anybody right now. I have to think about that. I haven't really, you know, maybe I've lost some of that.
Yeah. Well, Leo still has it for me too. If Leo does a movie, I'm going to see it. Keanu, if he does a movie, I'll see it. There's certain people.
This isn't your way of like trying to cast in the future, is it?
I mean, in a way, I guess it is. Because
sure. Well, why would you reach? You got Kate Hudson, so you know.
I'm attracted to certain artists, and their soul is what you absorb into your story, and they're the ones that tell your story. So I definitely have that deep connection. And Kate is a genius actress. I feel that the people that excel, that master comedy, I think it's a real type of genius, because it's the most difficult, I think, to really do, to connect and to sell it in a real grounded way. It takes nuance. And I'm always attracted to actors that have that. And she's like amazing in that way. She's so present. So, you know, and it was a character like Bonnie. She's this kind of street hustling shark. Right. She's a stripper, you know, and she kind of does things maybe that are sometimes for some people morally questionable. So it's like to not let it become a dark, you know, type of character. It's like Kate brought this real grounded levity to her. So yeah, I went to her house and she read the script, and turned out she was also a fan, and we just like hit it off. I fell in love with her right away, and she was 8 months pregnant when I met her. So that
get
was
out of here. Is that right? Wow.
She literally, I went to her house and she opened the door, and it was just like, there was a giant belly with a baby in it. And I remember just the blood sinking out, thinking, how are we going to do this?
She's supposed to be a stripper. Yeah.
And she's like, I can pole dance. I have a pole. I can't show you right now, cause I'm obviously unable to.
Right.
But then
that was a smart choice.
Yeah, we had this meeting about it. And then she, at the end, I was like, what are we going to do about the baby thing? And she's like, oh, I'll just push it out and we'll do the movie. No big deal. And it was such a Bonnie thing to say.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
And, you know, and I was just, she's a warrior. So.
She's so good in it, and I would have to talk to her and ask her some questions that I would have, because you can't really speak for her too much, because I would think I know she's done some things that are out there, but this is good for, I think, somebody who's but first of all, she's raised it by Hollywood royalty, right? So you know, but to do something that's a little bit more on the sidelines and a little bit more risky, I think it really speaks for itself, like that she took there's a lot safer types of roles, or, you know, I don't know. I think it's like she's unrecognizable in this film, by the way. If you don't know it's her, I mean, you might recognize her, of course. I mean, I'm not saying she's totally unrecognizable, but what I mean is her performance is unrecognizable.
Yeah, she really fully went for
it. She stuck
her
neck out for you.
Yeah.
She could tell she really is waiting for something like that.
Yeah, it's incredible. I can't wait to work with her again too. She's one of the best. So
yeah,
I think with certain actors that are like let's say Jim Carrey or any of them, when you become like a kind of cultural staple for a specific thing, they just build a business around that. It's not necessarily that they want to keep doing those types of things. It's just that this kind of business suddenly takes place around them being good at this thing.
That's right.
And
that's
so
good point. Yeah,
because they're all really artists at the heart. She just wants to disappear, from what I feel from her, is that she just wants to do cool art and disappear into something. So that's my sense of that.
I was listening to some a couple of years ago, and she was doing a podcast with her brother, and you could tell this is incredibly gifted person. I mean, did you ever hear any of those that podcast that she did? I don't know if she's still doing, but
they do it. I feel like I saw a couple of those during COVID. She's so funny.
Very funny, and the relationship they have is great. I mean, it's just It's really hilarious. They're such friends, and there it's hilarious. Yeah. Let's say again, Mona Lisa and the Blood Moon is currently out there in any way you want to see it. So, this is coming from a big fan too. You and Sheila sat with me in the office of Kina Lorber maybe 7 or 8 years ago. I don't know if you remember that.
Yeah, I do remember.
You do? I saw, because I came across some fun photos of that. Just goofing around it. I have very fond memories of that day and sitting and meeting you and turning.
Yeah, you're in New York. So it's like, I'm actually going to be there this coming weekend. I'm going to be there at the IFC Center for a couple of Q&As.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, and at the Alamo Draft House.
In Brooklyn?
No, the one in Manhattan on Friday.
Okay.
The IFC Center is like very close to my heart too. It's like they've showed all my films, and I adore the people that run it, and I adore the theater. So
John Vanko and Harris Du and all those guys. Okay.
Exactly.
Well, yeah. Well, I adore you and I adore your film. You're such a great guest. You bring so much when you show up. So I appreciate that. And I'm glad you talked about what was on your mind at the beginning too, because that's good. It's great. And that to me is really incredible stuff. And we're not getting that much information, as you already kind of alluded to. We're getting, you know, and what we're getting, you have to kind of be careful to check out, because it's kind of coming in slowly, you know, about what's
very
going
slowly
around. Yeah. So, but I appreciate your sharing that, and I'm going to go check it out myself.
Cool.
Yeah.
Appreciate that.
You bet.
Can also cut the interview off, like at where I was talking about that, and just make
unless anybody has some issue with it.
No, I don't think so.
You know, I don't do it necessarily a political show per se, but I do bring on a lot of documentary filmmakers. There's a lot of them that, and I look for topics that I think with subject matter that will, or at least talking about it, will contribute in some positive way to people, especially in the last few years or a bunch of years, instead of, you know, the alternative, I guess. I mean, you know, so because it's like important subjects, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I'm grateful, you know. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Appreciate that. I get all my information from podcasts, from Substack, and from like independent, from people who I specifically go and look for.
Me too. A lot of YouTube shows that nobody watches. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. A lot of people do. I think like the independent platforms are becoming more and more vital, and it's the most American thing, because that's where it's really free, thoughtful expressions and interpretations of what's going on in the world.
I agree.
Yeah.
All right. Well, have a great evening. And
thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. You as well. By the way, the movie Mona Lisa and the Blood Moon is really fun.
It is fun. I hope we didn't give the wrong impression. Well, actually, what I'm going to do, I'm going to show the trailer in the front before our conversation.
Yeah, that would be
cool. People get a good, strong sense of the tone of the film. I mean,
it's a good time at the movies.
And Craig Robinson's in it. And by the way, I buried the lead in that. And he's also, and so of course, although he kind of has the straight role in this one, which is kind of funny.
Yes, it's fun for him to go.
Because he's always playing the comic kind of, you know.
Yeah.
Foil or what have you. I don't know. So he's terrific. It's good to see him in this movie.
Yeah, I love him. He's an amazing guy.
Great cast. Yeah. Also, Ed Skrein. I pronounce his name?
Ed Skrein. Yeah,
excuse me.
He kind of murders in this movie. He's so freaking good.
And Evan Witten also. So I want to make sure I got all the cast mentioned in there.
Yeah.
And written and directed by Anna Lily Amirpour. So there you go.
That's me.
That's you. So next time with the next film, or we don't have to even wait for that. I mean, come, you know, if you like to talk, we'll do it anytime.
Yeah, hit me up.
I will.
Okay.
All right. Have a good have a good time in New York City.
Thank you. Thanks, Adam.
You're welcome.
Take it easy.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
She's got no place to stay. I'm helping her out for a little while.
Since when do you help people?
Hey.
She's a little miracle.
She's a fugitive.
Stop running! If you see this girl, do not look in her eyes.
Why do you think you're in charge?
I knew something freaky was gonna happen tonight. It's a full moon. I like feel it in my ovaries, I swear to God.
All right, we'll be back next week with a brand new episode of the show. We are going to be celebrating, as a just a heads up, a brand new documentary cinema just opened in New York City in the last month or so called the Firehouse Cinema. The opportunity to talk about that cinema also gave me the opportunity to invite somebody who I've been friends with for many years, Dara Messinger, on the show for the first time. And even though years ago I brought on John Alpert, who runs DCTV, where the Firehouse Cinema is located. So it was a wonderful opportunity to bring in someone who I wanted to after all these years of doing film wax radio. And also Phil Bertelsen, who is the director of a new documentary about a very controversial individual who was both a photographer, he was embedded in the entire civil rights movement, but what people didn't realize at the time, nor did the original filmmaker who started this documentary know, is that this guy was also an informant for the FBI. So it's a fascinating story, and it's called The Picture Taker, and we will bring Phil Bertelsen, the filmmaker, on next episode, as well as, wow, this is fun. The team behind a new narrative film, all shot, well, it appears like it all takes place on Zoom. Of course, it wasn't shot that way on a technical level. But we're bringing on some actors, some faves of mine. We're bringing on Allison Pill and John Gallagher Jr., as well as the director of this film. It's called The Same Storm. And the director, Peter Hedges, which I'm very excited about. So that all that on the next episode of Film Wax Radio. So, you know, keep tuning in. This is Adam Shartoff, the host of this little podcast. Please take care of yourselves and the ones you love. Until next time.